and welcome to Wargaming Recon. As always, I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to today's episode. We have quite a bit that I want to talk about today, actually. I have some mailbag. Actually, it's a Crisis Point AAR from Richard Crawley that I want to talk about. I have some thoughts on my Dead Hampton Revolution, which is a wargaming campaign that I'm running based on the American War of Independence, or as we say here in America, the American Revolution. I have a giveaway for coupons for Historicon 2012. I have some thoughts on the new line of Citadel paints. I also want to do a brief review of 10mm Old Glory figures. And then I want to talk about some of the overlooked features in the Hexographer map-making software. So let's start things off with a giveaway. I usually wait until later on in the show for this sort of stuff, but I thought, you know what, let's start it off on a happy note. So I received a couple of coupons from a friend of mine, my friend Court, and he had received these, and these coupons, they're good for Historicon 2012. Historicon takes place on July 19th to the 22nd at the Fredericksburg Expo and Conference Center in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Now, in case you don't know, Historicon is the largest historical wargaming miniatures convention in the United States, probably the world, and these coupons, they allow you to get in at a reduced price. So if you are a first-time HMGS convention attendee, you can spend $15 and get a one-day pass. Kids ages 15 and under are free. Now, this pass is only valid if you are not an HMGS member. It includes the vendor hall, the War College seminars, the Hobby University, Open Gaming, and more. Now, if you want to get one of these, I just need you to contact me because I have these physical coupons, but they do say on them that you can have a copy of the coupon for the one-day pricing. So what I'll do is, when I give these out, I'm going to scan these in, and then I'll send you the scan as like a PDF or something like that, so that way you can then just print it out and bring it with you. If you're interested in one of these coupons that get you in for a one-day pass for $15, please send me an email at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Please put Historicon giveaway on the subject, and then I will go ahead and get you these coupons. I want to give them away. I'm not going to be able to go to Historicon this year. I know some of my friends might be going, but I'm unable to go. And I'd love to be able to help those of you out who want to go, so you can get the special pricing of $15 for a one-day pass at Historicon 2012, July 19th to the 22nd, at the Fredericksburg Expo and Conference Center in Fredericksburg, Virginia. If you're not able to go, but you know of friends who might want to go, please tell them about this giveaway, and then have them email me, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, and then I will go ahead and send the coupons out. Other than sending me an email saying, hey, I want one of those, I want to go to Historicon, you don't have to do anything to get this. It's not a contest, you don't have to submit anything, whatever. You're just going to say, hey, I want one of those coupons so I can go to Historicon for $15 for a one-day pass, and then I'll send you it out. It's a giveaway, people. I'm happy to give stuff away. I love to reward all of you who listen to the show, and this is one of the things that I'm going to be doing to help out with that. Last show, I had done my big review, hour-long episode of HuzzahCon 2012, and it looks like people had been liking it because in the first, actually less than the first 24 hours, 33 of you had downloaded the show, so I am grateful to all 33 of the early listeners for the episode. Some early feedback was that people really enjoyed it, and I gotta say, I loved going to it, and I hope those of you who have yet to listen to the episode, episode 72, will go ahead and do so. You can subscribe, of course, to the show via iTunes and get episodes automatically downloaded to your computer as they become available, or you can go ahead and listen to them live via our blog, wargamingforums.com. So episode 72 is all dedicated to HuzzahCon 2012, and I hope you enjoy that. And then also I just want to mention that I had released episode 71 titled Let's Play in a Campaign, and that was basically kind of talking about all sorts of campaign goodness, and since that had been out, it has received almost 100 downloads, which is pretty good. So about 100 of you guys and ladies, I'm sure, have listened to that episode, and I hope more of you will do so. I will have more campaign goodness, of course, in this very episode when I talk about the Deadhampton Revolution. But I will also have it in upcoming episodes as I talk about Deadhampton Revolution, one-day campaigns, and other sort of campaigning stuff that goes on. So if you're interested in any of that sort of stuff, I would suggest that you download episode 71, Let's Play in a Campaign, and then, of course, here in this episode, I will be talking about some more Deadhampton Revolution. I had been concerned for a while that maybe, you know, listening to me talk about my fictitious campaign, or actually, my campaign's not fictitious, but that the content matter on it is fictitious, that it might not be something that you would like to listen to, but I've been told that people seem to enjoy it. So I'm happy to keep on talking about it, as hopefully you'll keep on listening to me talk about it. Now, since I've gone ahead and gone through that giveaway, and I love doing giveaways because I love giving you guys stuff is really what it is. In addition to, you know, hearing from all of you, communicating with all of you, meeting you, one of my favorite things to do is to give away free stuff, to run contests and promotions and all that sort of stuff, because I just love to give stuff away. So I'm hoping that quite a few of you will take advantage of this Historicon 2012 giveaway to get those coupons, because I have them, and I'm going to scan them in and send them to you. And one thing I didn't mention, and I really probably should have, is that there's no limit on the number of people who use a coupon. So it's not like one coupon per person. You can have one coupon, and it could cover like 20 of you or whatever. So as long as you meet that criteria, you can go ahead and do it. And if you want to find out more about Historicon, please head over to www.historicon.org, and they have all the information up there on the Historicon convention. I had mentioned at the start of the show that I had a mailbag, and I love doing mailbag because I love hearing from all of you guys. And today's mailbag is from Richard Crawley. Richard Crawley is a fine chap over in England. He was running a Crisis Point gaming weekend, which if I had lived anywhere near over in England or had been able to get to the event, I definitely would have gone to. Now, this was using the Cold War Commander rule set, and I believe they were using 6mm models. So Richard had promised me that he would go ahead and send me an email to talk about what happened at the event. And, you know, he, of course, needed a little downtime to recuperate from running it and organizing all of it and packing up and all that sort of stuff. And, I mean, you can understand that. I needed downtime just from going to, you know, huzzah, because going to a convention, it takes a lot out of you. You have a lot of fun, but it takes a lot out of you. And going to, like, a gaming weekend, it's the same thing, and even more so if you're the one running the gaming weekend or convention or whatever the case may be. So I know that he needed a little bit of time before he could get back to me, but he sent me a wonderful email, and it's a lengthy email, but I'm going to read quite a bit of it, and then I'm going to, you know, just kind of cull parts of it. So according to Richard, he says Crisis Point was a great success, that they had 14 players in the end, and as soon as they had finished, all of them were immediately talking about, quote, what are we going to do next year? And there's, you know what, I think there's no better praise than people being so excited that they want to come back next time and are eager to help get things going for next time. Richard has said that the battle was a pretty clear win for the Warsaw Pact, but even the defeated NATO players had a good time. In the end, they had raised $48, or actually I think he means £48, which is about $60 American, for their charity, the Royal British Legion. He said, I'm afraid Colonel Reinhardt didn't have the most successful weekend. His battle group was the first to break and flee the field. This was probably inevitable as soon as I decided to give him a name. Invest time and care in a new unit, and it will really do well first time out. It didn't help that the NATO players threw away their reserve in a futile attack on the Warsaw Pact rear area when they should have shored up Reinhardt's sector. Now, in case you haven't listened to some of the previous episodes where I talked about this, Richard was so excited by one of the mini episodes that I had done where I spent about half of it, I think, at least half anyway, just kind of promoting his event and, you know, spreading the word, because I'm still really excited about it, that he went ahead and named one of the HQ units in the event after me. So I've been promoted to Colonel, and there's some pictures of the unit. I have them up on our Facebook page. If you head on over to Facebook and you want to look up CWF Gamecast and Wargaming Recon, and then on our page, there's some pictures on the timeline there. And one of them, of course, is of my HQ unit, Colonel Reinhardt. So apparently my unit did not do very well. But Richard goes on to say that there's some blog postings that have pictures of the weekend event. I would strongly recommend that you go and check out his blog, which is thelandofcounterpain.blogspot.co.uk, and he has lots of pictures there. Also, one of the players, Richard Phillips, has a blog, which is littlesoldiers-cardo.blogspot.co.uk. And he has a whole bunch of pictures there. I'll have a link directly, of course, to both of those. And then there's a wonderful write-up by a guy named Alan Millicheap. Alan, I'm sorry, I think I just butchered your last name. But he's at 2twomarshals.blogspot.co.uk. And again, I'll have a link to the specific posting for that as well that has a write-up and then the pictures from Richard Phillips and Richard Crawley's blogs. Then Richard Crawley goes on to say he's talking about an episode I did of this show where I talk about the Dead Hampton Revolution. He says that he particularly enjoyed my podcast about the Dead Hampton Revolution, that my enthusiasm for the project shines through. He says that he has shared that emotional commitment many times in his wargaming history, that he has his own imagination campaign, but that he's approached it very differently. His is based on a land called Andravia. It grew out of his recognition that he has far too much in the way of 20mm modern, aka like 1980s onward sort of stuff, but no clear theme to his collection. So he had an Argentinian bazooka team, a Japanese Type 61 medium tank, an unmarked gray A4 Skyhawk plane, some various British, U.S., and Soviet vehicles, and then other figures in sort of a green and yellow desert color scheme. So he thought, what the heck? He created a fictional country that has a Mediterranean climate, so that's going to allow him to use basically all that sort of stuff. And then he settled on Andravia, which he positioned on the Black Sea coast. It's squeezed in between Georgia, Armenia, and Turkey. He says, rather than approaching my approach of setting down a lot of background economic detail at the start that he specified as little as possible, what he did do was to create this broad, you know, outline kind of history on why the different ethnic groups would be, quote-unquote, at each other's throats. And he also created a very vague outline map. Beyond that, he says that the geographical features have been added to suit the games that they wanted to play, so that there's a valley that exists because they wanted to game a NATO rescue column fighting its way down a long table into a town. And then there's a lake because he has a gunboat and he wanted to use it. And I mean, these are perfectly, they're fantastic reasons to have that sort of setup. He also has a bunch of hills because he had some great red desert terrain boards that he wanted to use, and that they went ahead and they played several games in the setting, and some of the guys at the Defenders Club in North Wales have picked up on his fictional campaign and have gone ahead and used it for some force-on-force games, which is really cool. He says that it's quite a different approach to what I'm doing, but he thinks that both are a great way of getting some interesting gaming done. He says, keep up the great work with the podcast, and thanks again for the plug. And I thought it was really funny that Richard put a little P.S., because he wasn't sure if plug translated to American English from English. And I sent him an email saying that, you know, I realize us Americans have butchered our the Queensland English, but that plug was definitely one that carried over. So, Richard, thank you so much for your email, and thank you again for all the work you did to name and then go ahead and paint and everything. Colonel Reinhardt, I really appreciate it. I appreciate your feedback and having you as a listener on the show and all the great work that you're doing over in England. So please keep us appraised of all future endeavors, because I'd love to keep on promoting all sorts of historical gaming. So it sounds like everyone had a fantastic time at Crisis Point and that they were able to raise some wonderful funds to help out a local charity, which is, you know what, there's almost no better reason to go ahead and play a game. So now I want to shift gears and I want to talk about the new Citadel paints. Now, Citadel has released a whole line of paint, and what they've done is they've recalled all of their other paints. So you're not going to find ones with names that you once knew, like Bolt Gun Metal or whatever, that they've gone ahead and renamed all of them. But they have kept the original paints. So they've added to their range, and what they've done is they've separated the paints out into different types. So you have paints that they suggest using for base coats, paints that they suggest using for layering or for shading. They have specific paints for dry brushing, and these are really cool because these are not as, you know, liquidy as normal paint is, they're drier and almost have a clay-like consistency. But they're still loose enough because they're paints, but these dry brush paints, you can go ahead, you can take it, and then you don't need to wipe off tons of excess on a paper towel like you had to do in the past. You can just take it and can just apply it to your model, and you're all set. Now, I don't know about you, but in the past, I'd be like, oh, there's this color I want to do, and I got a dry brush, and I would take it, you know, put a little bit on the brush, and then I'd wipe off 90% of what I had on there, and that's wasting a lot of paint, and paint's not cheap. So, you know, you're wasting all this paint, and then you're doing the dry brush, and then, oh, wait, you got to go and get some more, and you're doing the whole thing again and wasting tons of paint. So the chance of having these dry brush paints is really cool. They also have some glazes, some textured paint, which is really cool because you can use it on the bases of your models. So now you don't have to, like, paint the base of a model and then put some PVA glue on it and dip it into flock, whatever sort of medium you're going to do for the basing. If you want, you can easily get basing on by just taking some of the textured paint and put it on your brush and then painting the base, and you're all set. You have what looks like, you know, gravelly sort of ground underneath you. And they have it in a bunch of different colors. They got snow colors and mud, and then they got, like, green undergrowth and dust and all that sort of stuff. Then they also have some what they call technical paints. They have what they're calling Imperial Primer. You're probably used to, as am I, of when you need to prime your models, you go outside, you get that can of spray paint, and you're spraying the models, and you're priming them that way. Well, if you want, you can prime by hand now with this Imperial Primer. I've tried using black primer in the past, hand paint, black paint, to go ahead and prime, you know, my models. And it doesn't always work so well, but it does, you know, well enough. But this has the same qualities of spray primer, in that, you know, you're looking for that kind of gritty sort of surface for the paint to adhere to. But it's one that you apply with a brush. So if you're not able to get outside, maybe it's cold out or the winter, or maybe you just don't have a setup or you ran out of spray primer, you could go ahead and use this. They have liquid green stuff, which, you know, you could use to bridge gaps and stuff. I would still recommend buying the real green stuff if you want to do maybe sculpting or that sort of stuff, but you could go ahead and use this. They have, of course, Ardcoat, which is their gloss varnish that they've always had. And then they have what they call an Larmian Medium. And this is a paint medium that allows you to add your own colors so you can create custom combinations of paint. And then you have it right here in that container. So say you want to add a red and you want to add a blue because you want a certain shade of purple or whatever. You get it in and you mix it with this Larmian Medium. Voila, you got your own new paint which you can go ahead and name. Now, Citadel and Games Workshop, who of course produces the Citadel paints, realizes that, you know, they were maybe losing some market share to Vallejo and some of the other paint companies. Because, like, you look at Vallejo, right? And they have tons of paints, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of paints. And they got the game color and model color lines. And then the people over at Flames of War have picked them up. So if you ever bought any of the Flames of War paints, they're really Vallejo paints. They come in the eyedropper bottles, which is cool because it's fantastic for mixing. And they last longer that way. Well, Games Workshop, you know, a few years ago had gone back to the snap top lids for the paints instead of the screw top, which was better because the paint lasts longer. So that way you don't have to worry about it drying out. And I mean, you spend all this money for the paints and you want them to do what you want them to do. You don't want to go in and be like, oh man, the paint's dry, I can't use it. And then you can't get to the store and so forth. So this way it's going to last longer. But they also realized that with these new paints and with the new names for the old paints, people aren't going to know what the paints are, so you need some sort of guide. So they released this free little handy booklet, and you can get it at your local hobby shop. I got this at Battleground Games and Hobbies in Plainville, and it lists all the paints. It shows, you know, what colors they are, but then it also shows you how you could use their paints to go ahead and paint a Space Marine. And you're thinking, why a Space Marine? Well, Space Marine is probably what most people use for their first 40k army. It's what I used, and Ultramarines are the common Space Marine chapter. So they go ahead and they basically take you step by step. They have basing, they have layering, shading, glazing, dry brushing, and texturing. So they have, you know, this just blue Space Marine, and then they show you, like, that you would use a blue, a black, and then there's a metallic, and then this kind of leather color, and then how you would then go from that base coat and to go to the layering so that you can then add some highlighting to it. And then how you could shade it, because they have, you know, some really good inks to shade, and then glazing to kind of seal it in, and then the dry brushing so you can enhance, and the textured paint so you can do the base and so forth. So I thought it was really cool how they have this set up. They also have the information on their website. It's gamesworkshop.co.uk. It's actually, I think, games-workshop.co.uk, but I'll have a link in the show notes for that, of course. I haven't noticed any difference, really, in consistency of the paint or any differences in how they match up with the old paints. I'm a little hesitant to use the new paints right now because I'm in the middle of a project, which I'm going to talk about in 1 second. And I'm using up my old paints that I have, and I don't have all the new paints, so I know they match up, and the people at the store were showing me, how they match up and everything, and they look good in the models. I didn't notice, there's a clear difference between using the old paint and the new paint. They match. And the people at the store had made it clear to me that Games Workshop with the Citadel paints, they took the old ones, the same exact formula, they're going to look exactly the same, that you can continue a project and it won't be a problem. They just have new names, and the new paints, they fit in the same way with the pigment and all that sort of stuff and the qualities of the paint. It's just that Games Workshop was expanding the range and decided to rename everything, probably for copyright and trademark reasons, is my guess, but I'm no expert on that, so I could be incorrect. Anyway, if you like to go ahead and use Citadel paints, I enjoy them just because they're accessible. I'd prefer Vallejo, personally, but not many places nearby carry the Vallejo line, so it makes it a little difficult since I like to support my local game stores. But if you want to go ahead and use Citadel paints, I would suggest that if you haven't used the new ones yet and you need a replacement for one you have, or you need just a paint to add in because you're looking for new colors, go to the Games Workshop website, check out what they have there. They tell you on their website, what the name of the old paint was, what the name is, the new name is for the paint. So make a list, bring that with you to the store, look at what they have, and then ask questions with the salespeople because they should know about the product and be able to steer you towards what's going on. And then they should have, hopefully, still have these booklets on the new paints. And that will really walk you through. So I was very appreciative to Sam Pearson in particular, who gave me the booklet and was talking about the paints over at Battleground Games and Hobbies. So far, I'm liking what I've been using with the new paints, but I have not used enough of them really to give, a comprehensive thumbs up or thumbs down, as it were, to the whole range. There's too many paints. It's going to take me too long to do it. I could go ahead and, just buy tons of the paints, but then I'm spending a few $100 just to review a bunch of paints for you guys. And I like you a lot. I really do. And I appreciate how you let me into your lives and listen to me, but I'd rather spend a few $100 on models and some other stuff so I can talk about other things with you as well and not just paint. So it's just a sampling, but go ahead, try them for yourself. And some stores I know are allowing you to have painting clinics kind of in them, and they are using some of the newer paints so you can try them out and see what you think. But there really should be no difference. So there are those new Citadel paints out there, and check them out. Games Workshop's website and at your local hobby stores. Now, continuing with the line of painting topics, I want to do a brief review of Old Glory 10mm figures. So I've been talking about the Dead Hampton Revolution ad nauseum, right? And I just go on and on. And, you may wish that I would just shut up about it maybe sometimes. It's a fictitious campaign, right? The stuff didn't happen in this campaign. It's all made up in my head. I'm running it with some friends. And, we're going to play the games, use some black powder and all sorts of stuff. But, it's not real. So, and you're not in it, probably. So why do you care about it? And maybe you don't care about me talking about it, but maybe you do. I don't know. But this fits in with all of that, so, if you're not into hearing my review about 10mm Old Glory, which I'm using for Dead Hampton Revolution, skip ahead a little bit and see if I'm done talking about it. Otherwise, and I strongly urge you to continue listening, because I think it's interesting, otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it, but whatever. So the reason why I would go ahead with 10mm is basically 10mm is small enough that we can create nation's worth of troops for Dead Hampton by spending very little money, and also by using very little space. Now, the reason why we're going with Old Glory is really because of my buddy Court. Court loves Old Glory, and he's been using their 15s. We played with them for ACW, what we did Daybreak at Hangman's Creek over at TotalCon, and also for my Seaward March one-day campaign, and some of that kind of stuff. We used some of, I think they were Old Glory anyway, 15s for Napoleonics with some black powder and stuff like that. So like in the Old Glory, and they're really affordable. Now, I know there are other 10mm companies that you could go to. I think Pendragon is one of them, or Pendraken. It might be the actual pronunciation of it. So you could definitely go to them, but they're a little more expensive. So what I had done was I had purchased some of these 10mm, and I got... We're doing... Basically, it's Deb Hampton, as you may have figured out, is based on American Revolution. So I purchased some American Rev Militia and Militia Command, and you get 100 guys, roughly, in the Militia baggie, and it's 5 guys to a little stand. And you can clip them apart so you can fit more onto a base of your own devising, or so you could base them however you want. But they come like on a little metal strip. It's all pewter castings. Little metal strip with 5 guys on it. And then you buy the command separately, and the command has, I think it's like 50 guys in there. And again, it's 5 guys to a little metal strip. You got a guy holding the flag. You get a guy who with a stick kind of thing, a fifer. You got a rifleman and a drummer. And again, you could clip these apart if you wanted to, so you could do them separately. So, you know, I looked at the models, and they needed a little cleanup, which, you know, you expect. And I was looking at the castings, and, you know, for 10mm, they're decent, because, I mean, if you're doing 10mm, you're going to have probably a lot of them, and chances are you're not going to be taking them and just bringing them right up to your eye and going, let's look there at all the little details, and, oh, how much detail do they have in the face? Can you see some facial expressions? And really, what sort of stuff can you pick out to paint differently? It's going to be, you get them on the table, and you got like 500 of the models on the table, and the closest you're going to get is like 2 or 3 feet away. So I feel like when you're judging something this small of a scale, you really have to consider what it would look like on the table, and not like if you were entering to a painting competition, because chances are you're not going to enter 10 mils to a painting competition. And if you are, well, I'd love to hear from you, actually, and to see what you were entering. So these guys, if you are, you know, bring them up close. The castings, they're interesting. I had a problem with one where one of the guns was cut in half. And, like, the guns aren't all perfectly formed and, like, kind of bent. The legs on some of the models are like matchsticks. They're just spindly, and they don't really have any definition. It's just, oh, look, here it is, and it's connecting. But, you know, it's 10 mil, so maybe you don't really need the definition between pants and footwear. Maybe you don't really need all that sort of stuff or all the facial expressions. So when I had these, I was looking at them, I was like, oh, you know, they're okay. And you figure what you're paying, it's not too bad. And my buddy Court has a membership, so he gets a discount. So we're able to get discounts with our purchases for these. So that was helpful. And even without, I mean, it's not bad. It's like 10 bucks or so for a bag of these guys. So like 10 bucks for 100 guys, I mean, that's nothing, right? And you can easily get tons of them. But all things considered, goodbye. It's just, you know, if they were a larger scale, these, the way they're cast and the way they're sculpted would not be acceptable. But whereas the 10 mil, it doesn't matter because you get them on the table and you got 500 of the things on the table and you're not getting closer than 2 or 3 feet away. So they look good like that. Now, when I was painting them, and I have a blog article I'm working on that's going to kind of show you step by step of what I did. Originally, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to paint these things blue. I'm just going to dunk them in a blue. I'm going to dunk them in a quick shade. And then I'm going to, you know, do a quick dry brush. And that's it. Well, I did that. And I was like, they're really blue. I have an army of Smurfs. Now, that's okay if you're playing 40K and you're doing Ultramarines. But you're doing, you know, American Rev. You maybe don't want them to look like Smurfs. So I just went back. And I was like, what can I do to make them look a little different so they can stand out a little bit more? But is it going to take a lot of time? Because, like, there's 100 guys there, right? Well, 150 if you figure the command strips. So there's, like, 150 guys, and I'm going to have to do this 150 times. That's crazy, right? And this is only going to be, like, a few regiments. I'm going to need to do this, like, 6-10 times over. So by then, you're talking, like, 1,000 guys. What can I do 1,000 times? That's not going to make me go crazy, because if I go crazy, I'm not going to do it anymore, and I'm going to be like, oh! So what I went ahead and did was I just kind of went and with a, you know, a really thin brush, a nice fine detail kind of brush, I just picked out all their faces with a paint color. I think it was like Dwarven Flesh or something like that. And under the new Citadel paint scheme, that has a new name. So you would think since I was just talking about that, that I would be like, oh, well, that would be this color, but unfortunately, I can't tell you what that color is at the moment, but if you go over to the Citadel website, you can find that out. But anyway, I picked out the faces with that, and then some, but not all, but some of the hands on some of the command models, I also picked out with it. I didn't do, you know, any extra shading on it. I didn't do any extra dry brush. I was just like, boop, there's a little bit of paint, and you're done. So that makes it not be a complete smurf, as it were. You know, in time, what I might do, as particular units distinguish themselves during the campaign, I might actually go and I might pick out some of the details. Because, like, you can see backpacks on some of these guys, the guns, of course. So you could use a metallic color on the guns, brown on the backpacks, and, you know, the ammo cases and stuff like that. But I think this is just going to be what it is. So what I did was I used a dark blue shade on the models, and then I painted that on with a big, big, like, tank kind of brush that you get from, like, GW or wherever, but, like, a really big, nice, round brush, and I was like, woo-hoo. And then I got all the blue on there, and this was after, of course, I had spray prime them, which was interesting, because you spray prime outside, you know, and you do it on a box, whatever, and then 10 mils, if it's a little windy, things are flying around, so that was a challenge, but after I did that, you know, I just put the dark blue on, and then I was like, well, I need a quick shade them, because I love quick shade, I love the definition it gives, so, but I didn't want to, like, dunk them as quick as that was going to be. I knew that I would get too much on there, and that even with shaking, like, there's little gaps in here, and I don't want all the gaps to be filled with quick shade, because it's a varnish, so that kind of solidifies. So what I did was, I used my ultra fiber, ultra brushes, and I, of course, put my latex gloves on, my gloves, because I don't like to get that stuff on my hands. And I held, you know, a strip of guys, and I was just like, ooh, we got this on you, and doing this in the back, and then I rotated, and so I did all the bases, all the strips of guys that way, and it added some really nice definition, and then I went back, and I used a lighter blue, and I dry brushed on, and the dry brushing took a while, because, you know, there's like five guys per strip, and then you do all of this, 150 guys, so you go, and then you got to flip it over, and do the back, and so forth. So I did that on all of them, and then I applied the flesh color. So the models, you know, they're worth spending the money on, mainly because they're cheap, and when you look at them from 2 to 3 feet away, it's not going to matter, because you're going to have a whole gigantic cord of the things on the table, and they kind of definitely fit in with the way Black Powder goes. You can play with the small scale, and just change the distances a little bit for stuff, and then they're going to be fantastic for Dead Hampton, because we're going to need quite a bit. Now, moving into Dead Hampton, because I'm talking about how many of these things that we're going to need, I'm just, if I was prepared already, I would have had this open, but I'm just opening up my Excel sheet. I have a spreadsheet with all the stuff in it for Dead Hampton Revolution, you know, like how much money comes in per year, and how many different units that they can have, and how many guys per unit, and I've talked about this beforehand when I was doing, you know, the original Dead Hampton recording for the show, but we're going to need quite a few guys, because on the low end, you have the colonies based on the American Revolution, and it's the Continental Army at the time. So the number of men per regiment is a lot less than what it is for Dead Hampton, aka England. So when you're looking at like a regiment of infantry for the colonies, it's 540 men. And then if you go ahead and you figure that you have, like, one model, one toy soldier represents 20 guys, you need roughly, like, 27 toy soldiers, 27 models to represent one regiment. So if you figure in that you get 100 guys, right, in a bag, and you need 27 of them per regiment, well, some simple math, as you probably hear me doing right now, means that one bag of 100 guys is going to give you just under 4 regiments. So you're thinking, well, that's not too bad. It's 4 infantry regiments. But we're talking about, like, for everyone, right? So one of these colonies, New Dead Hampton, it has probably the smallest military in the campaign. Well, they have a possible number of 15 infantry regiments that they could raise. So if one bag is giving you just under 4 regiments, you can do the simple math again and do, you know, 15 divided by 4, and that's going to tell you you're going to need at least 4 bags of the stuff. So that's 400 guys just for infantry that you're going to have to go and paint and base and so forth and etc. So it's a lot of stuff. And then if you're looking at Dead Hampton, well, they got a lot more that they can possibly use. They have a total of over 27 possible infantry regiments. And you're thinking, well, that's not terrible because you're looking at similar numbers. Well, no, not really, because their infantry regiments have a total of 811 men in them. At one model per 20 men, you're talking 41 models to represent one infantry regiment. And again, if there's 100 guys in that bag, you divide them by 40, you're getting under three infantry regiments out of one bag. And so you're talking 27 divided by 3, and then you're getting, you need at least 9 bags of stuff. So that's 900 guys just for infantry. That's a lot of people. Lots and lots and lots of people that have to be done. So clearly, you know, doing something like this in 28 mil means you would be having so much space taken up that, like, just storage alone would be a problem for this. Like, I live, you know, in a condo, and one of the guys lives in a duplex, and like, not everyone has lots of storage space. So going to a smaller scale is fantastic because it allows you to have the larger numbers of stuff that you would need. But it also allows you to keep more money in your pocket, and then it allows you to have all this stuff in a smaller space. So I think 10 mil was a great idea for us. 15 mil could have been okay too, actually, but I don't think I would want to go smaller than 10 mil just because painting would be awful. My paint job on the 10 mil Old Glory is not the best in the world, and I didn't expect it to be. But, you know, it is what it is. If you're interested in any of the Old Glory kind of models, we're going to have a link to their website up on our show notes. But they have a couple websites, actually, and it's a little confusing. But if you go ahead and go to oldgloryminiatures.com, that's one of their websites, and as far as I can tell, both websites are for the same company, and I don't know why they have different, you know, websites out there, but one of them has more of the pictures on it, so you can see better what the models look like, and the other one doesn't have as many pictures, but oldgloryminiatures.com is one of them, and I think it's the main one, and then oldglory25s.com, oldglory25s, is the other one, and they're both basically the same company. They both carry the same sort of stuff and everything. Now, one thing to keep in mind with Old Glory is it takes a while for the stuff to get sent out to you, and the reason is they don't cast the models until you place your order. So you place the order, they receive it, you pay, and then they cast the models. It takes a while to cast them and then for them to ship it out. And I think they only work something like 3 or 4 days a week. So it definitely takes a while for them to do everything they have to and then for the stuff to get sent out to you. But, you know, you're not paying a whole lot of money for them. And the models are pretty decent. They don't take up a lot of space. It's worth the money. So now, at this point, I've talked a little bit about Old Glory and some of the other things. And I just want to talk about Hexographer, which is related to the whole Dead Hampton Revolution project. Now, Hexographer, I did a review on way back when I first talked about Dead Hampton on here. And I also did a review of this over at trollitc.com. Hexographer is a free and a paid program that is cross-platform. You know, you can use it on Windows or Mac or whatever to create maps. And it's wonderful for that. You can actually play a map-based campaign on here and show where your units are on there and stuff. Now, I'm not going to talk about how you use the program because they have tutorials on their website. It's hexographer.com. But what I want to do is they actually have a little manual for it. And in the manual, they talk about some of the overlooked features. So if you're using Hexographer or you're thinking of using it, these are some things that I think that you should consider because they're really cool. Now, one of them is that they have this feature. It's called GM only. So you can mark things on your map, or the entire map, or parts of the map, or versions of the map, as GM only, so that you can do that for, you know, terrain tiles, you can do it for icons to represent, like, cities and towns and units and stuff. You can do it for lines, like maybe national borders, or, you know, waterways and different shapes and stuff for different effects on the map, so that way you can have, like, a player version of the map, that you give out to the people in your campaign, and you have a GM version for you yourself so that you know where all the units are and how everything's set up and all the different resources. Because maybe you don't want them to know what kind of resources are over on Hex 0009 or whatever. But you as GM, you need to know that. So you can very quickly, you know, you just go ahead and with a couple clicks on these checkboxes, and voila, you made a GM version of the map, which is perfect for yourself. And then you've gone ahead and you made a player version at the same time. So you can then choose which version to print out or, you know, to save as like a PNG file or whatever to then send electronically to the people in your game. One of the other things that you can do, and it's really cool, they have a show hide checkboxes feature. And that allows you to create geographical only map versions or maps with just political features or without political features. So that way you can then turn on and off, basically, political features like the names of the countries in your area or their national borders. You can turn off, like, elevation and that sort of stuff. And other infrastructure. Sorry about that. I'm getting tongue-tied here, people. Infrastructure and natural features and that sort of stuff. One of the things that I think is probably the best and overlooked feature is the ability to create a child map. So when I first made my map for the Dead Hampton Revolution, I was doing it, and you know, I was going by what... Sorry about that noise. I'm just pulling out the map. I was going by what Henry Hyde had done in his Wars of the Fultonian Succession. And I was like, oh, he, you know, talks about having the map. And then he talks about, like, breaking down the maps so that you can then do detail for the individual hexes, because then you might have towns and stuff in there. And I was like, I don't know how to do that in here, because I got these big hexes, and that's all I got. Well, it turns out that when you make a map in Hexographer, you can then go ahead and you can choose child maps. And then you would select the area you want to have a child map made up of. You can then determine how many hexes you want to go into the original hexes. So, like, say you have one big hex, and you could divide that into, like, 10 smaller hexes, 100 small hexes, or whatever. So then you can then go into those smaller hexes, right? And you can add the terrain features. You can plot exactly where in that overarching hex of where the units will be and where, like, terrain features like bridges and all that sort of stuff will be. So that way you can have strategic and tactical versions of your maps, which comes in perfect for when you're going to be playing a campaign, right? Because you're going to need a campaign map so you know you're going from this spot to this spot. But then what if you encounter the enemy, right? And you need to create a battle going on for that encounter. So then you create a child map of the area. Kind of like a close-up if you ever looked on, you know, any of those Osprey Publishing campaign books. Like, oh, here's, you know, New England, the 13 colonies. And then we got this battle right here. And they, like, zoom in on the battle. And they just show you that specific area. Same thing with this. You zoom in, and then you can create the terrain features. So that way, you know, when you go and play the game on the tabletop, that you need a hill here, you need the forest there, whatever. And you have it all mapped out. Because if you're just going by the campaign map, you're looking and you're like, oh, Hex 11.00 is ocean, but Hex 12.00 is hills. Now, is all that hills? Probably not. That's probably the primary feature of that hex. So when you're actually zooming into what it would look like on the tabletop, you're not going to have just a bunch of hills. You might have a lot of hills nearby, but maybe you're in a valley over there, right? And that's where you're playing. So you can then do that in the child map. As you can tell, this is something I'm planning to play around with. It's going to take a little bit of time to kind of get used to it, but it's pretty cool. One of the other things you can do, and this is something I've already done on my maps, is you can change the icon sets. Now, they have some free icon sets already on there, and then they have some others that you have to buy. Now, one is just a black and white icon set, so that way it's easy on your ink if you're going to print out lots of copies of this thing. You don't want to be doing all the color and the definition of stuff. They have an alternate classic kind of set, and then they have one called Calligraphy, which is what I use. It has like an old map kind of feel. So if you've seen pictures on the blog of the Dead Hampton Revolution map, then you will know what I am talking about here. And then one other thing that I want to mention that's an overlooked feature for Hexographer And actually, I want to make that two other things I want to mention. One of them is that you can do a large size printing. So basically, you got a map, right? Maybe you want a poster size of it. You want to hang it on your wall. Maybe you're a game store, right? And you're doing your campaign there. And you need to have this map on your wall so everyone can see. Well, you can go ahead and you can do that because it's possible for you to do, like, make a file where 1 inch is equal to 1 hex or 2 hexes is equal to 1 inch. And then you can just go ahead and you export that at that size, and then you can print it out like at a professional printer, like a Kinko's or whatever, or any place that allows you to do the poster size stuff. So you made the poster, it's a large scale printing, and you got it, and it's perfect. And you could frame it or do whatever you need to do. One of the other things is something called feature decorations, and I've alluded to this earlier in the show because I talked about how you can play an entire campaign map-based campaign using Hexographer. So feature decorations, the symbols, numbers, and letters that are placed along the edges of the hex at different clock positions, like, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 11 o'clock, whatever, so that you can then place, like, say, a knight symbol, and then that could signify that there's a group of knights, for example, or, artillery symbol, and it's a group of artillery. And then you put, like, the number near it that designates how many there are. So on the Hexographer website, they have, this manual that I'm talking about. And on the page with the overlooked features, they have a picture. And it shows a few hexes. And in their example, there's, some red icons. It's a group of soldiers and some catapults. So there's, like, 2 soldiers and 3 catapults. And they're attacking a purple castle that has 5 troops in it. So that way you can then, you just update your map and show, oh, the unit's here, and there's, like, 5 of them here, and then 4 here, whatever. So you can exactly calculate where it's all going to be, and then you just run it that way. It's almost kind of like if you've ever played Civilization 2. It's a map-based game, turn-based game, and you have your units, and they're going on the map. It's kind of like that, but not as graphics-heavy. But it's an easy way for you to kind of do that sort of stuff. And I'm thinking I might consider doing it for Dead Hampton Revolution. Well, I've been talking for quite a while now, and I've kind of covered everything that I wanted to cover in my planning here for today's episode. So I think that although this is a little bit shorter, that we're going to probably go ahead and call it an end of the episode. So, of course, I want to thank all of you for listening to today's episode and for all of your support over the many episodes that I have released. Coming up, we're going to be talking about all sorts of things in future episodes. And one of the things that we'd love to talk about is when we hear from you. So I hope that you will go ahead and get in touch with me. You want to send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. We have the full way that you can contact us at the closing credits for the show. We talk about, everything, the Twitter and the Facebook and all that sort of stuff. So you can definitely get in touch with us that way. But email is probably the best. Or you can, of course, leave a comment on the blog, wargamingforums.com. I hope you will take the chance to participate in the Historicon 2012 coupon giveaway. I can't wait to give that stuff away to all you guys so you can get into Historicon for a reduced price. And then I hope you'll consider Old Glory for any of your gaming needs. So thank you, of course, for listening. Links to all the stuff that we've talked about will be in the show notes. And as always, keep on gaming.
If you want to check out something really cool, you need to tune in to the TriTac podcast. What's that you say? TriTac? What's a TriTac? TriTac is one of the oldest role-playing companies around. They make games like
Friendsworth, Euro 13, FTL, 2440, Incursion, Hardwired, Hinterland,
Weird Zone,
Beach Bunny Bimbos with Blasters.
Designed for D20 and Savage Worlds, these games will kick your dice into overdrive. Whether you want to combat the denizens of the underworld, travel the galaxy, get crazy with bimbos, or travel the multiverse and do it all, TriTac has you covered. Go to TriTacGamers.com to see what it's all about. That's TriTac Gamers.com. And check out our weekly podcast at TriTacSystems.podbean.com. Or simply enter keyword TriTac in iTunes. You're gonna love it.
What is Wargaming Recon?
December 7th. 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
3,000 miles from home,
An American army is fighting for you.
We today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base.
Historical Wargaming for your ears, only at wargamingforums.com.
Oh, the humanity.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.